Hey there, dudes and dudettes, and welcome to the Tubular Time Machine, the podcast that cranks the nostalgia dial all the way to 11. I'm your host, Jason Raz Rasmussen, and each week we jump into our gnarly retro ride and rocket back to a specific year between 1971 and 2010, reliving the raddest music, movies, TV shows, video games, toys, slang, and pop culture moments that made growing up in the United States so totally bodacious. But I'm not flying solo. Every episode features a special co-host who is exactly 14 years old that year, ready to dish on everything from mixtapes, mall food courts, to butterfly clips, and blowing into NES cartridges like a wizard. So grab your slap bracelet, rewind your cassette, and fire up the Tubular Time Machine theme song, where the past is always rad, and the vibes never go out of style. It's my absolute pleasure to introduce someone who has been a constant in my life for the past 37 years, my good friend Diana Hockenstad. We first met back in high school, where the magic of marching band and the beautiful chaos of band geek life brought us together. Whether she was playing brass or tearing it up on percussion, Diana's musical talent made her stand out, and her love for all things nerdy made her the perfect match to geek out with. Over the years, Diana has remained one of those rare people who sticks around, always showing up with a like or a comment on my posts, and always staying true to her fun, kind, and slightly nerdy self. Today, she brings a unique and personal lens to our look back at 1987, because Diana was right there in the thick of it, 14 years old, living it live. She's here to help us remember what it really felt like to be a teen in 1987, from the music and fashion to the slang and fads, and I can't think of a better voice to guide us there. Let's give it up for Diana.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
This is a good one for me because most of the people I've done in the past several podcasts, I've known in parts and pieces of my life, but I think you're probably one of my longer friends, being, you know, 37 years, but also one of the first people I met when I came to Colorado Springs.
Yeah. I remember us sitting in that band hallway just talking.
Oh, yeah. That band hallway was kind of like where all of us conglomerated, and it was a good good group of folks.
Right.
And I one memory I'll jump into before we jump into our 1987 recap is there was one day that we had where we went to the Air Force Academy in the morning, you know, for a band day where they had bands from all over Colorado. And our marching band was there and everything. And it was so cold. Everybody's fingers were freezing. We were all huddled together, you know, I mean, to keep heat and warmth and things like that. Oh, my goodness. That's one of my fond memories of high school, because I remember, you know, I got to be cuddled up with you and a couple of the other percussionists and things like that.
Yeah.
And that was great for a teenage boy, you know.
Well, and I had one of those things you click the button and it would warm up to keep my hands warm.
We had our half gloves, like us clarinetists and things, and so our fingers were freezing and the tips, and I don't know how we made it through that day, but it was one of those long-term memories that always is stuck in my head.
Well, you know, with the percussion we had the fingerless gloves too, and well, it was cold. Some of those nights it was cold. You know, one of my favorite memories from that time was one of the homecomings we had over at the Air Force Academy High School. And they had the parachuters come down. And the parachuters, I knew them all. So me and Sarah are standing at the back of the line, you know, because we, you know, made a line thing for them to run through. And they get back to me and they're all picking me up. And and all the band members are like, what the?
everybody.
Yeah, well, Sarah's parents sponsored all of them, so that's how I knew them.
Those were good times. I mean,
oh yeah,
I was only here for my junior and senior year, but lots of good memories those years.
Yeah, definitely. Oh, sorry, I was a freshman that year, so.
That's one of the things here I was about ready to say is that actually you were a couple of years behind me on my 14-year-old, because I was 14 in 1985, so you're 2 years past. So we'll have a lot of similar memories, you know, especially experiencing a lot of stuff, you know, in the same time frame as well as location. So that being said, let's jump into movies of 1987. Was there any particular movie that really kind of just, you know, pushed you or made you really want to go to the theater really bad?
There were a few of them, actually. Sarah and I went to see Good Morning Vietnam, of course, because we both liked Robin Williams. We went and saw a lot of movies, and we saw Good Morning Vietnam in that old mall that was over there off I-25. The
Tiffany Square Mall.
Yes, that's it. But that one was fun. We actually didn't suck face through that one because we actually enjoyed that movie. Yeah. There was The Untouchables. That one, I enjoyed that one. Lethal Weapon, of course. RoboCop. You know, some of these, you know, and of course, I think the Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. Mm-hmm. We definitely saw that one in the theater. And of course, Predator.
Now the question here is, though, were your folks okay with you seeing RoboCop and Predator in the theater?
They didn't know.
Yeah. RoboCop coming out in 1987, that was one of those controversial films because it almost got the X rating because we didn't have a NC-17 at the time. So it almost got the X rating for the violence and things.
Well, I was punk, and we did what we wanted, but we care a lot about, you know, what's going on and stuff. But my dad was doing a lot of business trips, and my mom, you know, she raised me Christian, and I totally rebelled. Yeah, Sarah and I just did our own things, you know. She was 2 years older than me as well, so.
This is interesting to me because you're actually not only my first female guest, but also you're my first guest who was, while raised Christian, rebelled, because most of the other people I've done so far have had a very, you know, strict and or Christian upbringing, and so they did not get to see things like RoboCop and Predator in theaters because their parents would have lost their minds.
Yeah, well, you know, I didn't, you know, I had to hide cassette tapes from my mom, you know, because she was, I tell people I survived the satanic panic of the 80s, you know, because I did. She, you know, I couldn't listen to Queen or Elton John because they were gay, you know. However, you know, back in the 80s when Queen albums came out, my friend and I, a different Sarah, and her mom was, you know, Christian too. Our moms were like best friends. We'd sit there in her bedroom and just listen to her Queen albums. There's always a way to get around, you know, some of that stuff. Yeah, I was like, you know, some of that Christian stuff, it just didn't make sense to me as a kid. It's like, why are you saying this?
This has also been a recurring theme on almost every episode so far, is the going to a friend's house to catch up on things you weren't allowed to at home.
And exactly.
So everybody seems to have that same theme and overarching trope going on.
Yeah, well, and Sarah and I would rent a lot of, we'd go to Blockbuster and rent a lot of movies that way too. So yeah, my dad was, you know, when I moved in with him, you know, later in my high school years, you know, he didn't give a care. He's just like, yeah, whatever. Yeah.
So let's see, you mentioned a few of them. Good Morning Vietnam, that seems like it's not really a advanced one for a 14-year-old, but it probably didn't have the same impact as some of Robin Williams' direct comedy.
Well, you know, I enjoyed it because my dad, it was a Vietnam vet as well. Okay. And so it kind of showed me a little bit more of what I experienced, because he never talked about it. He had a very hard, rough time over there. His best friend died in his arms over there. And it was, you know, tough. The only times he really talked about it was when he was drunk and he would recreate it. And that was, you know, scary. But also The Lost Boys came out. And and that, I totally fell in love with Kiefer Sutherland in that movie.
Who didn't? I mean, Kiefer Sutherland was awesome in that film, and it has one of the best soundtracks of any movie ever.
Exactly.
That one made vampires cool again.
Yeah, none of this Twilight-ish, you know. I watched like 20 minutes of one of the Twilights, and all it showed was the camera circling around some lady, and I'm like, This is boring.
Yeah, I've not seen, nor will I probably ever see the Twilight films.
Nope, me neither. Me neither. I don't go
for glittery vampires.
That's one thing, Mike.
Let's see, what else did you say? You said RoboCop and Predator. We already talked about those. Are two awesome films. Planes, yes. Trains, and Automobiles. John Hughes at his best. Cool vampires.
Dirty Dancing came out, but I just wasn't that kind of a. I don't like chick flicks. You gotta have action for me and sci-fi and that. But
you're saying Dirty Dancing wasn't punk enough for you?
No, it just. I mean, we watched it. I think we rented it years later.
Yeah,
but I was like, "What do people see in this?"
I'm the same.
It's mush.
Kind of fan.
Yeah, I'm not a mush fan.
Well, for me, it's always because the relationships are always so forced, or it almost always relies on cheating in some form or something along those lines. And so it's just never really, there's very, very few romance movies that I actually enjoy, because that's always the same way. It's coveting someone else's, you know, relationship. And it just, to me, that's one of the things I just like, I can't stand. And so I
can't either.
Now, no. we had Mel Gibson back before he was a nutball with Lethal Weapon.
Exactly. Those were fun, you know. I always throwing his shoulder out. And the other guy, I can't, he always, too old. Yeah, Danny Glover. I'm too old for this ish, you know.
I have a Danny Glover story in regards to this. You know, Danny Glover, of course, star of Lethal Weapon and also plenty of other stuff. But I was going to go propose to my wife one night, and I wanted to go to Garden of the Gods and go to the Overwatch area that used to be there and propose at sunset and things. But we had taken so long walking around the park that it was getting dark. And so we changed plans. And there's an Italian restaurant down there near Garden of the Gods, 925. And so we went over there instead, you know, to have some dinner. I didn't propose that night. And so we're sitting there minding our own business, and I'm facing the restaurant, so she's got her back to the restaurant. And I say to her, I say, Danny Glover is walking right behind you. And she's like, yeah, okay, right, whatever. I said, no, Danny Glover is walking right behind you. And sure enough, it was Danny Glover, you know, just, you know, visiting someone in town and stuff. But it's just like, what a weird thing, you know. I was going to propose.
Oh, wow.
I see Danny Glover. I thought about very briefly going out to the parking lot and saying, Danny, I'm about ready to propose to my wife. It'd be awesome if you could be part of it. I didn't want to interfere with his time and stuff. Any other films from 1987 that really, you know, got you going, or, you know, that really drove you at all?
No, not that I can think of. I mean, we watched so many movies, I don't even know which ones we watched.
Yeah, this is kind of the beginning of the, not downfall of cinema by any means, because, I mean, obviously, like you said, we still got RoboCop and Predator out of this and things, and some pretty amazing, Lost Boys, right. All these good ones, but 1984, 1985, 1986, probably three of the best years in cinema. Comparatively, 1987 is starting to go down in regards to the top films, because when your number one film box office release is Three Men and a Baby,
wrong,
you know?
I had learned probably a couple months ago that there were more Lost Boys movies. There's I had no idea.
Well, the other ones are not very good.
Yeah, we watched like the 2 and 3, but then they get into the Frog Boys or whatever they were called.
Yep.
Corey
Feldman.
Corey Haiman was cool, but Feldman didn't like him much.
They were at their height of their popularity and around this time frame. They were in everything. License to Drive, The Lost Boys. It was the Coreys that you always get the double pair or whatever. Okay, well, I can't think of any more films. How about television shows? Anything that you fondly remember watching with the family or watching at nighttime and, you know, chilling on the couch with?
Definitely Cheers. So we lost Norm a few days ago.
Yeah, George Wendt. That's a sad one. He seemed like a really nice guy.
There was Alf. I didn't watch him like religiously. He was like, Alf was like one of those shows, like if there was nothing else on, that's what you watched.
I actually just rebought the series on iTunes, and so I've watched a few episodes again, and it's the cheesy formulaic ideas, but it's still fun, you know, having Alf from Melmac, you know.
Right. Oh, what is it? MacGyver, of course. We watched every episode of MacGyver.
So you learned how to fix any problem with a toothpick and a piece of gum?
Oh, yeah, definitely. And I remember the one, it was towards, one of the ones towards the end where we learned his middle name, which is actually his first name.
I never got to MacGyver. I never really watched MacGyver, but I did watch him in Stargate SG-1 later on down the road.
Yeah, I watched that one too, yeah. Of course, I think the Bill Cosby show, which, yeah.
That's a running joke on this podcast because it keeps showing number one or two in the rankings. And it's like, oh, we can't really talk about that anymore.
Well, of course, there is Married with Children. Sarah and I watched Married with Children quite a bit.
You know, you do bring up Married with Children, which has come up on a couple of podcasts previously, but 1987 is when it actually came out. So this was a good year for that because it was something new and Fox was still a new station and it was kind of, I don't want to say raunchy, but it was definitely your parents' sitcom.
Yeah, I don't think my parents watched it, but you know, Sarah and I would watch it, you know, especially when we were over at her house.
It's funny seeing this list because I've seen these lists now for several podcasts. And it's surprising how long some of these shows have been in the top 10 rankings and everything. Cosby Show, Cheers, Golden Girls, Family Ties. These have been in the top 10 consistently for a range of like 7 or 8 years at least.
Oh, really? Oh, I liked Matlock. That stuff has always interested me. So, watched a lot of Matlock. And then later, because my stepmom liked Columbo.
Yeah. Columbo's great. Actually, I need to introduce that one to my wife because she said she knew who the character was, but she's never seen an episode.
Really?
I've got it on iTunes. I just haven't played it for her. You can just say, just one more thing.
There is Moonlighting. I didn't watch that one that much, but I did like Chris Willis. Of course, Die Hard. Got to do a Die Hard Christmas movie.
Well, I remember when Die Hard first came out, or was first coming out, and they said Bruce Willis is the action star, and Moonlighting had been most people's introduction to him, including myself. So I'm like, Bruce Willis, an action star? Are you kidding?
Yeah, I remember that.
Then he went and proved this all wrong. That's like saying Heath Ledger is cast for the Joker. You're like, what? Proved us wrong. I don't really see any too many others that really jump out to me. Most of them are just the repeated shows. And so, I mean, I watched Cheers. I watched some Golden Girls and some Growing Pains and some Who's the Boss and some Family Ties.
60 Minutes, you know, if my grandparents were watching it, then I watched it. But
you were an advanced 14-year-old.
I always was. I was one of those students in school where I was always bored. I didn't learn how to read by doing phonics. My mom would read and I'd follow her finger. And that's how I learned how to read. I have a photographic memory. So I didn't like a lot of the kids stuff. Yeah, I was in fifth grade and my dad had given me the book, the Huckleberry Finn to read. And so I was reading that. He's like, if you have any questions, you know, ask me about it, you know. And I was reading it, you know, because back then I was in fifth grade. And the teacher, she came and she took the book away from me. And I'm like, and she's like, this book's too old for you. You can't be reading this book. And she called my dad later that night. My dad's like, I gave her that book to read. And if she has questions, she can come to me and ask me. So give her book back.
Jeez. It's not the epitome of a good educator right there.
No, no, no. I grew up in Manitou. There was a lot of good times we had. In my neighborhood, there weren't any girls. It was all boys. And we had the biggest yard and we had a big old huge alley and stuff, so all the guys would come over to our yard and we'd play soccer and I've always been, you know, more of a tomboy anyway. So we had a lot of fun.
I've been here since 88. So I met you at 15, when you were 15 years old. So I bet you a year later than our podcast here.
Right, exactly.
Any other TV shows that really...
There is Family Ties, but I only like Family Ties because Michael J. Fox.
During the filming of Back to the Future, he couldn't get out of his contract with Family Ties. And so he would work Family Ties basically during the day and then go straight to filming Back to the Future and then go back to filming Family Ties and then back to filming. It was like a whole, you know, thing. And he just said he was just exhausted during the process.
Oh, I bet. I didn't know that. That's, wow.
Yep, it says his driver would take him back to his house. He'd basically take a shower, get changed, eat something, then go to the filming of the other thing.
Wow, that's crazy. That can tear a person up, you know.
Well, oh, it's probably one of the best decisions in his life, too. I mean, it was probably a rough time frame, but everybody knows Michael J. Fox now.
Had it just
it would have been like, oh, there's Michael J. Fox. Now it's like, hey, it's Michael J. Fox.
Right, exactly.
Okay, let's go ahead and move on to music then. I'm assuming, based on your musical styles and your punk background, that you are not a pop fan.
No, I mean, the only one really on this list is Walk Like an Egyptian. Yeah, I mean, you know, because in 1987, The Cure's Kiss Me, Kiss Me, Kiss Me came out. Those are tapes I had to always carry back and forth to school so my mom wouldn't find them in my room during the day.
What was wrong with The Cure?
Nothing. She just didn't like me having anything. I mean, you know, Satanic Panic. I mean, I couldn't even, you know, when I was younger, I remember as we were in church and I started writing a letter to Santa Claus and she's like, oh, no, don't write it because, you know, the same letters in Satan. I love my mom. Yeah.
The Cure and Santa. No, none of that.
Right. I couldn't listen to people because they were gay or I didn't like metal. I liked the punk, you know, and tell that the way I dressed. I didn't care. You know, I just wore what I liked and what was comfortable, you know.
Well, and I think you were dyeing your hair before a lot of people were, you know. Mm-hmm. That was still kind of like they dye their hair a different color, you know. Now it's like everybody does, but back then it was like, ooh.
Yeah, I had the side, my side shaved, mm-hmm. and then the curly other side, you know, and we did a lot of hiking growing up. We had gold plaster claims and stuff, and so I would spray my hair with bleach and water and go for a hike, and it'd be blonde later.
I remember. So The Cure was one of the ones. Any other bands, punk bands or anything like that around this time frame that you were really into?
Oh, yeah. The Descendants. There was, you know, of course, we listened to the Sex Pistols and the Dead Kennedys. There wasn't much of a punk culture here in Colorado. I mean, there was, but it was really tiny. I went to like the Annex, you know, the nightclub. The punk started like the late 60s through the 70s, and then it kind of started to die off in the 80s and then kind of morphed into the goth scene. They weren't punk, but I liked Oingo Boingo. I liked some new wave stuff, not a whole lot of it.
I think when you mentioned Oingo Boingo, I think this is pretty much when Danny Elfman broke off and started doing soundtracks for like Batman things.
Yeah, but you know, when you listen to somebody a lot, and with all the movies I've watched, we could always tell which music he composed in movies for. So I go, oh, that's Danny Elfman. And sure enough. But I also liked Madonna. I liked Cyndi Lauper. I liked Cyndi Lauper more than Madonna.
I think Cyndi Lauper kind of almost... I don't want to say punk, but she embraced kind of. that different... You know, the people that were different kind of thing and still Definitely. Does, I say.
Definitely, yeah. And I still love her. You know, back then there was, I wish I could remember the name of it, but it was the Air Force Academy, and it was every Saturday night they would play alternative punk music. But we listened to that a lot too. And the neat thing about my new beau is, you know, he grew up in Huntington Beach, where, you know, that was punk. That was punk. So we watched a documentary on that. And he's like, yeah, I was right there in the middle of it. And, you know, just the stories he's got to tell, you know, it's, I love listening to his stories. You know, it was kind of like the Huntington Beach was kind of like the CBGB of for California.
One thing you brought up just a couple minutes, or like a minute ago, was that you had to listen to a particular station at a particular time on a particular day to get the music that you really wanted.
I mean, yeah.
People today don't understand that because we've got all the streaming services, you know, Spotify, all those. You can pick whatever kind of music you want to listen to, and it goes on for all day long.
But right. Yeah,
back then I listened to it was a heavy metal station out of Denver. But yeah, the same thing. You had to listen at a particular time to get the music you really wanted. You know,
right.
And you record it under your cassette so you could listen to it later.
Yep. Yeah.
Life has changed a little.
Oh yeah, definitely. I mean, we've made mixtape. I remember, you know, in Manitou, there was, his name was Frank, and he was all punk. I mean, he had the tallest mohawk, and he'd walk around with the boombox, you know, on his shoulder. And I remember walking home with him one day, and he's, because it was the last day of school, and he was playing School's Out for Summer on that thing, really, as loud. So we're walking down Manitou Avenue.
Music-wise, I think we've done a good job covering that. Were you a video gamer at all in 87?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I mean,
oh yeah.
You're lucky here because 87, if I'm looking at the list of what's out for, especially for the Nintendo Entertainment System, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
I mean, this year was like the ultimate year for video games for Nintendo.
Yeah, well, you know, Legend of Zelda, you know, I had that green, or not the green, the gold.
Triforce?
Yes, I had that one. You know, and of course, I still play Zelda to this day. I've got it on my Nintendo Switch, the Breath of the Wild, and then the latest one.
I still have to play the latest one. I've got it. My son played it, but I haven't played it yet because he's got the Switch down in his man cave. So I haven't got it yet, but I actually plan on doing it this summer.
Nice. Yeah, I love that one. And then, of course, I remember Punch-Out. We didn't really play it, but I remember it. And then, of course, Contra. Contra was one of those hard ones where you only got 3 lives for the whole game.
Yep.
And it took me a while, but I finally passed it because you had to memorize each thing.
You didn't have to memorize it if you had the code.
Me and my brother, when we played it, we didn't like using codes. We still know the up, up, down, down, left, left, right, right.
Yep. See, that's the thing is that from our generation, everyone knows that code. It's become a staple in pop culture society.
Yep. Yeah, I saw a t-shirt the other day. It's like, oh, that'd be a neat shirt to have. I passed Contra without the code.
Nice. You're good.
Yeah. And then I wasn't as much into Mega Man. My brother was.
I enjoyed Mega Man. Mega Man, one of those ones I recently rebought, like the whatever it's like the 8 game package or something. And the fun thing with these games, all these ones we're talking about, is that you put this in front of a kid today, they will not survive. They will die in 2 seconds, you know, because you know it took some stamina and some fortitude to get through these games.
It did. It did. And then of course I like Street Fighter.
Oh yeah. This is the original, yeah.
Yeah,
Dalzim and Chun-Li and Blanca and Ken and Guile.
Yep. And I can't think of the shark and
that was there was Ken and Ryu.
Yeah, Ryu. Let's see.
Afterburner was fun in the arcades.
Yeah, one was fun. I'm Kid Icarus.
I was a big fan of Metroid.
Oh, yeah, I remember Metroid. For me, Legend of Zelda and Contra were the big ones.
I think almost all of these on the list are the big ones for me. I mean, I played Zelda and Tyson's Punch-Out and Contra and Double Dragon and R-Type and Afterburn, Street Fighter and Castlevania 2. And I never did play Kid Icarus back then. Metroid, I played Ikari Warriors in the arcades, Outrun, Rampage, Gauntlet 2. All these. I've played all these so much, you know. Rampage was always a fun one to play with your friend. Actually, Gauntlet 2 was as well. Play with your friend, you know, because you'd play one and they'd play the other and you just tear a town apart. Gauntlet 2. Gauntlet used to be one of my favorite arcade games. Your wizard is getting hungry or whatever it was. You had the wizard, the barbarian, the archer, and Valkyrie, I think it was.
Okay. Yeah, I kind of remember that one now.
I mean, but this year, out of all the video games I've done so far for the list of them, honestly, I think some of these are defining because, you know, Zelda, of course, has been one of Nintendo's staples for so many years.
Yeah, I mean, well, they have a manga of Legend of Zelda now. I have a little necklace that has the little fairy in the jar.
Oh, God. Over here. Kill that little thing.
Yep, and of course, all my kids like Legend of Zelda too. So, and we'd sit there and I'll play all of it. So we'd play that all together too.
your family has good taste.
Oh yeah, well, you know, and when they were littler, and I was playing one of the Zelda games, they would just sit there and watch me.
Yeah.
Like, you guys want to play? No, we would just want to watch you. Like, okay, I don't have a problem with that.
And I got a Nintendo because this is one of the stories here because Nintendo, you know, came out pretty much close to 1987. And so for Christmas, my aunt and uncle actually got us a Nintendo system, which is maybe they're to blame for part of my video game addiction over the years.
Well, you know, in the 70s, you know, my dad, we had Pong.
Yep.
My grandparents had the Ataris, and so my grandparents only lived three stories up the hill from us in Manitou, and so I'd go up there and play their Atari all the time, and, you know, I've got good memories of me and my grandpa just sitting there playing Atari.
I had the Intellivision.
Back then, we had the old VIC-20s, and then after the VIC-20 was the Commodore 64. My dad would buy these programming books, and so I learned how to write programs on the VIC-20 and then the Commodore 64. And so when Apple came out, I would write these programs on the Apple computers. I actually got kicked out of my computer class in Manitou because I knew more than the teachers. They put me in Spanish.
I used that to my advantage when I taught web page programming over at the first high school I was at, because I knew enough web page programming to get by, but I had one student in the class that knew way more than me, so I was always changing the questions over to him. So, oh, you got a question on this particular thing? Oh, yeah, well, you know, this guy over here, you know, they have him give you a little insight into there. You know, ask them, ask your peers before you ask me, so that way you're collaborating.
I remember going over to my uncle's house with my dad, and, you know, back in the 70s and the 80s, to get on the internet, we had to put the phone receiver on the modem. There wasn't much on the web back then, but we were getting on it.
Yeah, I remember that from my fifth grade classroom, because, like you said, you had to dial the phone number, wait for the screech, put the phone down in the cradle, you know, and then you were online, but it wasn't like web pages and stuff. It was
right.
Bulletin boards and all that.
Good times, though. And, you know, I remember going to Sears, and my parents, I would just go to the computer section and I'd write little programs on all the computers there.
You're a little hacker.
Yeah, I'd have little tanks going across the bottoms, or, you know.
Mine was when I was in middle school and I was programming, it was more like the old Zork games and stuff, to where it was a predetermined path, you know, but you had to put in a particular, you know, like a direction or, you know, and stuff. And so that's the kind of stuff I was programming in BASIC back then. video games, I think we did a good coverage of. How about, were you a comic book person at all?
You know, the only comic that I really read was the Guardians of the Galaxy.
Okay.
Those came out in 1969.
Oh, yeah, the originals. They had, yeah, they had the original Guardians in Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2, I think it was. That's Sylvester, yeah, Stallone, and then they had the Crystal Guy and stuff like that. But that's a, yeah, throwback to the originals.
But yeah, I fell in love with them back then, you know, because they were through the 80s and 90s too. And then I read the newer ones. And of course, when the Guardian Galaxy movies came out, I was so excited. I couldn't wait.
Yeah. Well, this one, this year here, 1987, actually had two of the big ones. They had Batman Year One, you know, by Frank Miller. So Frank Miller is one, yeah, of the iconic Batman guys. But also, more important, not more importantly, but just as importantly, was Watchmen. You know, Watchmen, which has gone down through the ages, but Watchmen,
oh, yeah,
violent and not family-friendly comic books of the time frame, became a cult, you know, I mean, like a giant classic. I had some of the first Watchmen comic books.
When my uncle passed away, and it was 99, and I was going through, because he had a lot of car magazines, so I was going through his car magazines, just, you know, opening them, and because he got me on the Spider-Man, mm-hmm, and so I read a lot of the original Spider-Man because of him. One of his old comics came out of this magazine, and it was the Spider-Man versus Sandman. So I'm like, I've got that. So that's like one of my treasured possessions right now, you know. I didn't read the comics, but I watched the X-Men, the series. Yeah, some of the X-Men movies, and I'm like, I wish they focused more on the Beast, because I like the Beast. He was my favorite.
Well, supposedly he's in the new film.
You know, is he?
Yeah. I'm talking more about the animated series in this case, though.
Yeah, yeah, I like the animated series. I also like the animated Spider-Man too.
Yeah. But, well, say X-Men. This time frame, actually, this is when I was collecting X-Men comics, and they had one of the best runs with the writer Chris Claremont. You know, and so the Uncanny X-Men had the mutant massacre and all that kind of thing happening at this point.
Oh, yeah.
Wow. If you didn't read it, then you won't understand. But it was pretty big for that time frame.
Yeah, I also like Deadpool. I mean, the Deadpool, Ryan Reynolds, he does such a good job, I mean, of being Deadpool.
I think this is the highest grossing R-rated movie ever.
It reminds me of the comics, because that's how it was.
I had a couple more I collected back then. I collected the New Mutants.
Yeah.
I didn't realize Suicide Squad was this old.
I didn't either.
It looks like Venom came around for the first time in 1987.
Venom was with the Guardian of Galaxies for a little while.
That's interesting to see if they'll do that with the new one, because apparently they're changing the cast up a bit, and there's been talk about him joining the films.
That'd be cool. That'd be cool. Well, because they were also with Thor too for a little bit too. So that was kind of fun to see him in the last one. The Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Yeah, my brother read those ones. So once in a while, I'd sneak one of his comics at that.
I remember getting those at the Cosmics and Comics shop out in California. And that was when it was like, what? Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles? What the heck? And I had them. I don't know where my first ones went, because I know I had like the first three or four of them. And they're worth a boatload of money now. But unfortunately, yeah, they disappeared. 1987, we had a few different fashion trends to move into there. And I remember your fashion trends. Was there anything that you had to have that was like, because, you know, you were not the typical teen in regards to fashion trends?
No, I was. I did, like in the early 80s, I wore lace fingerless gloves. There really wasn't anything really that I was given a Swatch watch from a boyfriend I had in eighth grade.
I think everybody had Swatch watches back then.
Yep, I did have a pair of dark gray parachute pants.
Did you really?
Yeah.
Did you lose a bet?
I don't know, but it was in Manitou. All the boys were wearing them, so my dad bought me a pair too. I of course from the 70s, I always had a pair of Converses, so I wore Converses. That was pretty much my shoe that I always wore because I couldn't afford Doc Martens back then. And I did have a pair of cool bowling shoes. A couple of us from we were all in band actually, and we all went the four of us went bowling, and the pair of shoes I mine were just brand new bowling shoes, and I loved them. And I was like, man, I wish I could buy these bowling shoes. And we were walking out of the bowling alley, and my friend was like, I think I forgot something inside. And she went in and she stole my shoes.
Ah. Oh
So
my.
I had the pair of the bowling shoes.
Police, we have evidence, though.
Of course, my Converse back then, I think I had, remember, it was a teal pale pair, and I always wrote stuff all over them. But yeah, I wasn't into, I mean, I remember, like the Reebok pumps and those, but I wasn't into those.
Each person had their own cliques, and each person had their own clothing style and everything. So, but a lot of
Yeah.
these were very pop, poppy pop.
Well, and I had leather jackets, but I didn't always wear them to school because I didn't want anything to happen to them, because I used to joke, my dad rode motorcycles a lot, back in the 80s and even the later 70s when I was little. I always joke, that I was the turn signal because I'd ride on the motorcycle in the back and, the turn left and right, because they didn't have the blinkers on the motorcycles back then. So I was the turn signal.
So you stand there remote control.
Yep. And so we always had leather jackets, because of that. And that was a punk thing too, with the spikes and stuff. I didn't really wear any spikes because, if you're on the motorcycle, you don't want a spike going into your eye.
Yeah, for some weird reason.
Yeah. In the early 80s, I did, me and my girlfriend, we bought matching neon green lace gloves that we wore.
There's a couple commercials that were fun in '87. Anything here that you wanted to talk about?
Where's the
Where's the
beef?
beef? Still around? Yeah, they're always still. That one went on forever.
Yep. And then, of course, Michael Jackson's the Pepsi. I did like Michael Jackson. I still like Michael Jackson stuff. I think it was, I completely freaked out one time because I used to listen to the radio to help me fall asleep. And so it would just play all night. And I woke up, I had this dream that Michael Jackson was singing to me. He was singing Dirty Diana. And I was like, oh, this is really weird. What a weird dream. And then when I woke up, the song was on the radio. It was the first time it was on the radio. And that completely freaked me out.
You're having a premonition.
Whoa.
This is before his hair, he got his hair caught on fire.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Some of those old, with the Michael Jackson one with the kid who is like totally love Michael Jackson, and then it was one of the Pepsi commercials.
Yep, doing the moonwalk.
Yeah, it was the moonwalk, and then Michael Jackson turns around and is like, oh, the Energizer batteries, the bunny.
Yep, that one we talked about in a previous podcast, and I went back to look how long that one had been. That campaign has been running for like 30, 40 years now.
Wow, that's crazy.
We had animal mascots with Spuds McKenzie back then.
Yep, I remember Spuds McKenzie.
One of my
I
good
didn't.
friends that I hope to get on a pod on a reality show with, he's still got original Spuds McKenzie poster that he's got down in his man cave.
Oh, wow. Oh, the tastes great, less filling.
Mm-hmm.
Miller beer. And then the Noid.
The Noid was around for a while. Was the Noid because you got like cold pizza delivered or something was wrong with the pizza? You have to avoid that, you know, the Noid who messes with your pizza.
Now that I'm thinking about it. That's what it was.
He was a little red guy, you know.
Yeah, and the tall ears.
Mm-hmm. Avoid the Noid.
Avoid the Noid. The Coca-Cola and the Pepsi, those were still
at war.
Yeah, I remember was it the Pepsi challenge?
Yep.
My mom loved Pepsi and she did the challenge one time and she picked Coke. She's like, oh, that's terrible.
I was wanting to do the Pepsi challenge, but no, I never got to experience it in the real world.
Yeah, me neither. I had to watch her.
For those unfamiliar with the Pepsi challenge, what they'd do is they'd hide the drinks behind little, barriers, yeah. And you couldn't tell what you were drinking and stuff. And so people in the Pepsi challenge is that, oh, people like Pepsi more than Coke kind of thing. DLT was still at McDonald's when I was working there. In the styrofoam, you know, you had the hot side where the hamburger was and then the cool side, the lettuce, the tomato.
Yeah, I remember that.
And then no matter what, I worked at McDonald's at the time. And so, yes, you had the hot side, the cold side, but you put it in the heat bin, you know, and stuff. And it's like, wait a minute. Going back to that Miller Lite campaign, there was taste great, less filling. It was two sides, you know, where they had to sample a beer or drink a beer. And one side was arguing and said, it tastes great. The other side, less filling. You know, and they would argue back and forth, you know, with the same beer. So let's see. If we go into the top foods and groceries, let's see. Any top foods and groceries there? That
Crystal Light. My mom loved the lime Crystal Light.
So she believed in Crystal Light because Crystal Light believed in her?
Yes. That's the only one she would get, though, was the lime one. She didn't like any of the other ones. She was a health fanatic. So we didn't do fruit roll-ups. We didn't do pastaroni, Pop-Tarts.
Now, it is worth mentioning that with regards to Pop-Tarts, they came out with the frosted blueberry flavor, which is still one of the central flavors of Pop-Tarts these days.
Yeah, I mean, once in a huge while, I would buy my kids Pop-Tarts. You know, if we were going up into the mountains or something, I'd get them. But we didn't have those very much.
I recently, for the heck of it, bought some for the first time in years and years because Girl Scout cookie flavors are now in Pop-Tarts. So they have a thin mint flavor and a Samoa flavor and stuff. So they were actually kind of fun, you know. I mean, I'm not going to get them again.
Interesting.
It's all sugar, but, you know,
right.
it was fun to taste Girl Scout cookies for breakfast.
Yeah. Oh, Cool Ranch Doritos. I liked those. Those were good.
Yep. Once again, these are some staples that are still around today that, you know, we all base off of 1987, you know, Cool Ranch Doritos being the equivalent of the regular old Doritos, you know?
Yeah. Now they've got all sorts of different flavors of those things. Fruit roll-ups?
Still around.
Is it a McDonald's McChicken test marketing phrase?
Yeah, I didn't realize that the chicken wasn't a staple because I started working at McDonald's in 90. Actually, was it 90 or no? Maybe it was.
No, because it had to have been because Sarah and I came by one time and you were working.
We'd started the Mexican restaurant stuff. So we actually had, when I worked there, we had tacos, we had fajitas, and we started the whole breakfast burrito, you know, thing. But I didn't realize chicken was only briefly before that.
Yeah, I didn't either. No duh.
Duh. Yeah. See, and we got the big thing here being the name of the podcast, of course, Tubular.
I always made fun of the girls that would say, gag me with a spoon. Gag me with a spoon. Psych.
We talk about psych every once in a while because we transfer the word psych to the word not, you know, when Wayne's World comes around.
Totally. That's totally awesome. Or.
Well, see, totally bogus.
And of course, don't have a cow. You know, you got the Simpsons. Didn't the English ladies show the Simpsons started on that?
Yeah.
Tracy Ullman. Thank you, Michael. Tracy Ullman. So I grew up watching the Simpsons back then when they were good.
Yep, that's the biggest, one of the big news stories of 87, the Simpsons debuting on the Tracy Ullman show. I remember watching it on the Tracy Ullman show because I watched the Tracy Ullman show.
I mostly did too. For
the Simpsons.
I did too.
That was another show that was actually a new show on Fox. You know, right. Again, like, kind of pushed the limits a little bit. So this list is kind of rad.
I remember in elementary school, the term bad was good. So we used bad. Oh, that's so bad.
Yep. Now it's all mid.
Yeah, I had my kids tell me what some of the terms were. I cannot repeat them here, but it's like, oh, okay.
Oh, wow. Trust me, in high school I hear it all.
There's a word for that.
None of these words make any sense in, you know,
nope. Nope. You know, I didn't really say a lot of slang, you know, and being, you know, having a lot of Norwegian blood, you know, we just don't talk much. And then when we do say things, we mean those things.
Yep. Being Scandinavian is fantastic.
It is. It is.
So let's see then. If we're going to go out of that range, we can talk about fads real quick.
Trapper Keepers. I had one of those in, which one did I have? It had rainbows all over it, I think.
And Trapper Keepers were one of my two that I'm like, yeah, I had a Trapper Keeper because the kids today don't have Trapper Keepers. They were awesome.
And yep, they were. See, boom boxes. I did have a boom box. Of course, you know, got to your Frank the Pumpkin Manitou with the huge, and when I knew him, he had a red mohawk. He was like in high school. He was cool. Oh, my brother did have that Rubik's magic puzzle thing.
Nothing ever quite got the same popularity as just a plain old Rubik's cube.
No, my daughter can solve that thing under 2 minutes. She's got a huge collection of Rubik's cubes. She loves the speed ones, but she like collects those things.
Another big fad on here. I was a collector of the Garbage Pail Kid trading cards.
Were you? I didn't get into those. I mean, I would look at other people's stuff, but I wasn't into those. Like I said, I did have one swatch that was given to me. And of course, yo-yos. But I had always liked yo-yos because I would watch the Smothers Brothers with my dad and my grandparents. So the yo-yo man, you know, I wanted to be like the yo-yo man.
Yep, I remember that. I don't really see any other fads. I mean, those were some of the biggies. The Trapper Keepers to me are some of the biggest, though. Everybody was cool with that Trapper Keeper.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, those things were just, I mean, it had your folders and the three ring and everything in it. So
as a 14-year-old, then let's move on to some of the news stories and events of the year that you may remember as a 14-year-old. You said you watched 60 Minutes, so you might have more of these bigger adult ones than some of the other 14-year-olds I've done so far.
Yeah, I remember my parents talking about the Black Monday, the stock market crash.
A 508 point drop, and it's like, wait a minute, didn't we have like an 800 point drop earlier the month, whatever?
Yeah, because my dad, he invested a lot, so he would have me look up his stuff every day. I do remember Oliver North.
Oh yeah, good old Ollie.
Oh, of course, Gorbachev, tear down this wall. I remember Gary Hart, but I don't remember like who he was, but I remember his name. The big one was the baby Jessica. She fell in the well.
An 18-month-old that fell into the well. Yep. And that was on the news for forever.
Yep. And then, of course, the Jim Baker scandal. I think my mom watched him.
Let's see. Last things. Biggest events of the year.
I kind of remember. I think I just read it in a newspaper article, but the world population was 5 billion.
The world population reaching 5 billion, and now we're over 7 billion going toward 8.
I there was the premiere of Full House. I think I watched that, and I was like, yeah, this is not for me.
I kind of like the cheese still, you know. It was always cheesy.
Yeah.
I even watched most of the reboot, or not reboot, but the continuation of the Fuller House.
Just did you?
Yeah. And there's a big one. I don't know if a 14-year-old I would have remembered this. I didn't remember this, but Aretha Franklin becoming the first woman inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
I kind of briefly remember that. You know, of course, Ronald Reagan's Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall.
One of those iconic phrases that's gone down in time.
Yep.
Which yeah, I just taught Cold War to my students. I taught Cold War to my students just recently, and we didn't quite get to this to the fall of the Berlin Wall, but you know, it's just the heightened state of anxiety around the world during the Cold War.
I remember one of my friends was there, and he brought back a piece of the wall, and I got to touch it. I thought that was the coolest thing, you know, back then.
Yeah.
I'm touching the wall.
Well, that's when we were in high school, so.
That was pretty amazing, you know, watching that on TV, you know. Of course, the release of The Lost Boys. There was also a movie, what was it, Summer School?
Yeah. With, what's the girl from, not 90210, well, what's the other one? Melrose Place, Courtney, I can't remember Courtney's last name.
Yeah. Me and my friend, back then we still call our girlfriends. We went and saw Summer School at the theater. I don't know how many times.
I think I recently, like 2 years ago, rewatched that one again.
Did you? Yeah.
And it's funny seeing it from the point of view of an educator, just this inappropriate relationship and in regards to the teacher and students and stuff. It's like, oh my God, you know, how'd this get through?
Yep. And then the two guys that loved horror stuff and were making the props and stuff. And then the guy who, he went to the bathroom at the beginning of the movie and then he returns at the end.
Yeah, it passes the class.
Yeah.
I've got students like that. I see them maybe once a semester. Yeah. Well, yeah. I think we've really come to the end on a lot of the big stuff in 1987. Was there anything else that really kind of marked who you were in 1987 or that we missed or didn't really cover that you wanted to bring up about your life as a 14-year-old back then?
No, I mean, because that was 86, 87 was the first time I was away from, you know, Manitou and the foothills and the mountains, living on the flatter part of the Springs. I think that's when Sarah and I met and started going out. And those were some of the, I was able to be me that year and for the 5 years afterwards, because I allowed her to be who she was and she me. And so, yeah, I think a lot of it was just the freedom to be me, because I've always fought for my freedom, even growing up. And so that year was a really good year.
I think that's one of the reasons that we've also been friends for so long, too, is that back then, especially as a teenager, it's like just taking a person for who they are and what they are and things like that. You know, you and we're never really the, you know, you fit in this category, therefore, you know, whatever, and things in regards to your friends and in regards to yourself. And I think that's a key thing in regards to teenagerhood, because you want to feel accepted and you want to feel, you know, important to everybody and kind of thing. And so like our friendship's kind of based on that back from then too.
Yeah. I, you know, from a young age, I always had to deal with things by myself, and I didn't think it was fair, you know, that other people had to be hurt. So I mean, I had all sorts of different friends. I'd make fun of the preppies, of course. Of course, in band, you know, the trumpet players are always the goof-offs. you know, we would turn our trumpets around and
yep,
blow through the horn part, and then it would be a really bad stinky part on the flute players. I think teacher wise, I mean, Mr. Krause, and he really let me be me in band and let me explore the different instruments and stuff without having to rent them. And of course, the other teacher was Mr. Z Zaliga, and
I never had him.
Oh, he was awesome. He took me aside one day because he was ahead of the history and geography department, and he took me aside his office there behind his classroom, and he's like, "Science department's talking about you," and I'm like, "Oh yeah," because I was terrible in my earth science class. I did not like the teacher, so I was bringing in rocks, you know, that looked like other rock, or, you know, he'd say something and I'd start laughing. One time he was talking about water witching, and he goes over to the sink and I could tell he was shaking the thing, and I'm like, I just start laughing. He's like, "Now what?" And I'm like, "You're doing it wrong." And it's like, plus you're not going to find water because you're in, you know, concrete and pipes and all that stuff. And he's like, "How do you know?" I was like, "Because my grandpa taught me how to do it." Because I science was always my thing. I like chemistry. I couldn't take biology because I was allergic to formaldehyde. So when that smell was real strong in the science hall, I just couldn't be there. So I didn't have to take that requirement. So instead I did, you know, geology. But my geology class was easy because I grew up in that stuff. You know, I was in sixth grade. My teacher, Mrs. Brees, back then, she enrolled me in the very first Science Olympics. Do you remember the Science Olympics?
Oh, yeah. They're still around.
Right on. Yeah, I attended the very first one up in Boulder, Colorado, and I did the rock and mineral identification, and there was out of 100 kids, I came in 10th, and there was only one other girl in there. Other than that, I was all boys. But yeah, I love the science. I did, for extra credit one time, I did it because my dad, we used to, well, in Manitou, we used to bomb ants with hydrochloric acid, so I was used to working and playing with hydrochloric acid. And there was a test you could do using hydrochloric acid and heat and stuff to check to see if there was gold in different rocks. And so I did that for a test, and I get to the hydrochloric acid part, and he gave me diluted hydrochloric acid. And I'm like, "This isn't going to work." It didn't work. I'm like, "I need the real stuff." And he's like, "Well, you can't." And I'm like, "I'm used to doing this. I'll be fine."
So he's like the Phantom of the Opera situation.
Yeah. So, I mean, science, you know, I mean, I was reading books about black holes, you know, also in fifth grade, you know, so I was always ahead of things, but I studied and liked the things that I liked, you know. My dad always had really strong telescopes, you know, and we did look at the stars and the moon and stuff every night. And so there's that part, but then, you know, there's my rebellion. Somebody's going to tell me something to do, I'm going to do the opposite. You know,
don't record this podcast.
Right. But yeah, I've always had kind of a rebellious nature, you know. I also love people for who they are, you know. I mean, that's the best gift you can give somebody, is to let them be who they are.
Okay, Diana. Well, I think we've come to an end on our podcast for the week. 1987 is a good year to be a 14-year-old. Lots of fun things there. Like I said, this is a year before we met, so that's pretty fun. But yeah. Since we've come to the end here, you know, any last words of wisdom for your 14-year-old self?
It's totally awesome.
Yeah, okay, excellent. So, listeners, I want to say, cowabunga, time travelers. That's going to do it for this ride in the Tubular Time Machine. Thanks for cruising back through the raddest years with us. We hope you had as much fun as we did cranking up the nostalgia, reliving those gnarly tunes, iconic movies, epic video games, and the pop culture goodness that made growing up totally awesome. Major shout out, Mondo, thanks to my weekly co-host for another righteous trip down memory lane. Your stories and vibes make this retro journey even more bodacious. Want to keep the party going? Hit us up on social media. We're talking Facebook, Instagram, and maybe even a little MySpace just for the LOLs. And don't forget to cruise over to TubularTimeMachine.com, where you can catch past episodes, send us your memories, or suggest a year you want us to fire up in the flux capacitor for next time. And hey, if you're digging the ride and want to help keep this retro machine rolling, head over to buymeacoffee.com/MrRaz. Your support helps fuel future episodes and keep the good vibes alive. Until next time, keep your mixtapes fresh, your VHS rewound, and your vibes totally tubular. Catch you on the flip side, dude and dudettes.
Hey there, dude and dudettes. It's time to rewind from neon nights to that vintage vibe. Mixtapes, arcades, butterfly clips. We're cruising the past with totally rad tips. Break it up.